Welcome to Ancient Future Faith with Dr. Chris Alford, pastor of Epiclesis, an ancient future faith community in Sacramento. Just what is ancient future Christian faith? Join Chris each week as he talks with special guests about a refreshing renewal in evangelical worship and spirituality that's helping many believers get in touch with their ancient Christian heritage. Now, with another look at how the road to the evangelical future runs through the ancient past, here's Dr. Chris Alford.
Well, hi there, folks, and welcome back to another edition of Ancient Future Faith. My name is Chris Alford, and I'm the blessed guy who gets to be the pastor of Epiclesis, an ancient future faith community in Sacramento, California. As always, I love to encourage folks to zip over to our website. It's epiclesis.org, and among other things, you can learn what in the world an epiclesis is. We love to bring you a wide variety of guests to talk about, gosh, all kinds of things, ancient future faith and Christianity and what's going on in the world and what's God doing in his kingdom. And today, live in the studio, I have a very special guest. Her name is Aubrey Ashey, and she's here with me with her dad, who is my colleague, also one of our pastors, Dr. Rick Ashey, although he's not, you don't have a mic back there, Rick, so you're just going to kind of watch today. Is that okay?
Yes.
Aubrey, how are you? It's great to have you here.
Hi, Pastor Chris. I'm doing really well. Thanks
yeah.
for inviting me on today.
Oh, I'm happy to have you here. And you've been so, I mean, it's a minor miracle that I even get you to sit down for a little while because you've been very, very, very busy lately. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Now you're getting ready to go on a major, wonderful pilgrimage kind of missions trip. That's what we're going to talk mostly about. But you've also just come back from a major epic trip. And maybe we should start with that. You're just now coming back from Central America. So just tell the story. How'd you get there? What'd you do? And how long was it? And was it just great?
Yeah, absolutely. So last year for the academic semester, I was studying abroad in Ecuador. Ecuador is in South America. Mm-hmm. And it's a beautiful little country that's super biodiverse and the people are incredibly, incredibly nice and just super hospitable.
I want to know how you came to choose Ecuador. Was it like your bucket list thing or was it the only place it was available or you had several to choose from? How'd that work?
I really am passionate about learning Spanish.
Okay.
And so I was looking for different Spanish-speaking countries. Mm-hmm. And I had kind of ruled out Spain because I know that that's a big spot for a lot of people to study abroad. And I was like, okay, I want to do something different. I want to do something unique, something that's really very different from U.S. culture. And so I bet it was. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It was very different from U.S. culture. And so I was looking around at different places and my values really aligned with this program called Living and Learning International. And it's a Christian program. And we had chapel every single week and we had homestays for a month, but also had a good community of people in the house. And it just seemed like they embodied intentionality. So I decided to go with that program. And that's kind of what led me to Ecuador. I wasn't super particular on where in South America. So I just, yeah, Ecuador was perfect.
So I made a mistake when I said Central America earlier. You were even south of that. And in fact, right on the equator, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, let me back up and ask you about the sending organization. What was the name of that again?
Living and Learning International.
Okay.
It's part of a ministry of One Collective, which we'll hear a little bit about later.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. And this was something that you became aware of and was offered through your school, I'm assuming?
Actually, no.
Oh.
I heard about it through my school, but
okay.
I'm only like the second only person from Point Loma to go. And it was actually not an approved program for me. I had to get it provisionally approved.
I see.
And so now, because of the good reports I've been sending back, it is an approved program and there is going to be another Point Loma student there next year.
Oh, good. But, when you say approved, was that so that class credits could transfer? Is
yes.
that the whole point? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so it wasn't a program that my school partnered with, and so every single class and every single little detail I had to get approved by each department, and so that was a whole process.
I'll bet that really took a long time.
It did. It was a little bit hectic during, I think it was around October, and I was trying to figure out all the study abroad stuff, but I was also working on a massive project I was creating. This sounds a little silly, but I was on the campus activities board creating a haunted house with another of my colleagues.
Yeah, so a big project.
Big project, yeah. So
I don't know that I've ever shared this with you, but I have a similar situation in that I spent my final undergraduate year, senior year, abroad.
Really? Really?
That was the whole year. And I did it through International Student Exchange Program, and it was a direct exchange. Nobody came back in my place. But I had to get a whole year's worth of credits all lined up, and it was a nightmare because I waited to do this until my senior year. So if I was going to graduate, I had to get it all lined up. In fact, in order to make the credits work out, I had to take 24 units, 24-hour credit units in my summer quarter before I left.
And
I still have like PTS dreams about that. So I hope you didn't have to go anything so crazy like that.
No, definitely not.
So you were there in Ecuador for how long was it?
I was there for 4 months.
Okay, so a relatively quick trip. I assume that you're doing stuff for class credit and other, I don't know, projects or what. Tell us a little bit about what the daily grind was like. What are the tasks? What are you doing? How are you taking up your time?
The courses that I was taking, because it was compacted, because at the end of the semester we would travel, and so it was very rigorous. And so I spent a lot of my time, I spent 12 hours a week in Spanish classes, and my days kind of looked like I would go down the hill, probably have my biology class or something like that, and then I go out for almuerzo with some friends, which for those listening, it means lunch. And so I'd go out to grab some lunch with some friends at a little mom and pop shop, and then go and settle in for my 3-hour Spanish class. And then after that, especially for that 1 month while I was in my homestay, then I would go back and speak more Spanish at home. So
would you say that the quality of teaching, I mean, did you get a good education there, I guess?
Yeah, absolutely. I was amazed by the education that I got there. It was one of the first places. I love Point Loma Nazarene University, and I feel like I have received a good education, but just this level of education where the class sizes are 5 or 6 people, some classes even 3 or 4, and the professors, you know them well, they teach Bible studies for you, we see them in chapel, we all eat meals together a few times a week, and so like they really care for you as well. So I was able to have some good relationships with my professors and just really enjoyed that academic experience.
Well, and I guess a lot more intense and immersive, and it's like drinking through a fire hose, I guess. You're getting a lot of content at you all the time. Would you say now that you are mostly fluent, sort of fluent, how would you say your Spanish is?
I really hope one day to become fluent. However, currently I believe I'm getting close, like I'm approaching conversational. And so to become fluent, I would need 2 more years living immersed in a Spanish speaking like country and culture. And it's really interesting, before trying to take on and learn a language, I thought that it was like a quick, easy process. Like I've heard stories of people going and being immersed and learning something in 2 months, like that kind of thing. But it really is a long process if you want to understand all of the intricacies.
Oh, sure. And I can imagine there's sort of one level of basic vocabulary, but then to get into the little idiomatic phrases and things that are colloquialisms and that kind of stuff's got to be hard.
Yeah, and it's made me build a greater appreciation for people coming to the United States trying to learn English. Absolutely.
So, yeah, you know, you hear somebody who's, say, coming from Mexico or a country in Europe, and they're doing really well with the English, and they're so apologetic. You know, my English is terrible. And you're going, no, you're fantastic. I really admire what you're doing here.
I like to joke that my host brother's English, because he was learning English at the same time, and French as well, but his English was better than mine sometimes. So,
you said that Ecuador was biodiverse, and I want to talk some more about that in a minute, and also your interests in maybe a future career or calling. But first, let me remind folks that they're listening to Ancient Future Faith. I'm the host, Chris Alford. I'm the pastor of Epiclesis. In the studio with me today, sitting back in the corner saying absolutely nothing, is my colleague, Dr. Rick Ashey, who's our pastor for intergenerational discipleship. His daughter, Aubrey, is in the studio with me and talking about, well, a couple of things. She just came back from a long trip. Actually, it was a short trip, but lots of content in Ecuador. She's getting ready to go off on another far-flung mission. We're going to talk about that. But just before the break there, Aubrey, I mentioned that you had said that the country was very biodiverse. Does that feed into, I'm guessing, something about what you feel especially called to? That's important to you. Tell us about that.
I wouldn't say that that's necessarily something that I'm called to in the future. However, I have a deep appreciation for nature. And I think that's something that my family and my father has cultivated in me. And so it was beautiful to see just like the different types of plants. And at the same time, taking a biology course and learning how, from a Christian perspective, how all of the intricacies of God's beautiful creation points back to him. So
you all are very outdoorsy. That's for sure. Not something we have in common there. I tease people all the time about how non-outdoorsy I am. So I really admire that about you. But what are you thinking about in terms of a future career? Because somehow I thought it had to do with, I don't know, biology or something like that. Am I getting it wrong?
You're getting it close. So my major currently at Point Loma Nazarene University is management with a concentration in entrepreneurship and a minor in nonprofit organizational management.
Now, how in the world does that have anything to do with biology? I wasn't even close at all. You're just being kind.
In the future, I'm not exactly sure what I want to do yet. And that's kind of why I've been doing different internships and experiences like this to kind of narrow down, find out that. But I am hoping to combine my calling as a Christian to love and serve others with my career in the future. So that's why I'm kind of interested in the nonprofit organizations, the nonprofit field. And I was thankfully able to have an internship with One Collective as well in two different nonprofit little offshoots of One Collective.
While you were in Ecuador?
While I was in Ecuador.
How in the world did you have time to do anything? Good heavens.
Yeah, I did not have very much free time.
No. What were those nonprofits? I didn't plan on asking you, but it just fascinates me. What were they doing?
So I was working for Second Chances and End Slavery Ecuador. End Slavery Ecuador helps to empower women to move out of prostitution, and they help them holistically to build life skills and also spiritually be able to build up their understanding of Jesus and of Christianity as well. And then Second Chances helps boys and children with devotionals, but also provides some lucky individuals with a place to live if they're in need of that as well.
Well, I know something about you and your heart, and I can imagine that even though you were there for a comparatively short time, you made some real heart connections. And was it hard to come home?
It was definitely challenging to come home. I think kind of something that was discussed with us as they were preparing us to come home is like the reverse culture shock and like how our worldviews have kind of changed and how we're preparing to enter back into the culture of the United States. But I was honestly ready to come home, and I'm really happy that I was able to come home. I could see myself living in a cross-cultural setting in the future, but because of the rigor of the academics and every single week we were going on little expeditions, adventures all over the country, getting a really well-rounded sense of like Ecuadorian culture, it was a little bit restless at times, and I felt the need to be able to come back home and spend that time.
What did you sleep for 4 days straight when you go home?
Just about, yeah.
Is Ecuador a place you'd like to go back to sometime?
I would love to, yeah. I built really deep connections with my host family there, and they're incredible. One of the daughters actually wants to come visit me, I hope, one day. But yeah, I'd love to go back and visit them.
Well, let's get the larger context now. You are not yet finished at Point Loma. How much more time do you have there?
Yeah, next year I'll be a senior in college, and so I'll have 1 year left, and then I'll be out of there.
Going to graduate on time, you think?
Yes, going to graduate on time.
Now, ahead of your final year, you're going to go off on another adventure, this time also to a Spanish-speaking country, but an entirely different culture and even brand of Spanish, I guess you could say. Tell us where you're headed.
I am going to be headed to Spain, and I will be working with One Collective again, which is kind of how I was familiar with the organization, but I'll be working in Santiago de Compostela and with their two different ministries there.
Did you get the idea for this trip while you were still in Ecuador? How did this trip come about? What was the genesis of it?
Since early November of last year, I've actually been looking for an internship. Someone placed the thought in my head, hey, this is kind of your last summer before life gets real, before you graduate, before you have to get a job and all of those things. Like, you should consider staying in South America. So the entire time I was applying for different organizations in South America, different ministry opportunities, different internships, and even meeting with the director of Latin America for One Collective. And One Collective, for those of you who do not know, they have locations in 65 different places around the world. And so, yeah, I was looking for an internship.
So how did Spain pop up? How did that come about?
I was towards the end of my search. Nothing became fruitful. There was a lot of interviews while I was there, a lot of applications and searching, but nothing really came to be. So I was actually preparing to return back home to the United States. I had shot an email out to the group in Spain because I was like, okay, I really want to continue learning Spanish. I really want to have another international experience. And so almost forgetting that I emailed the group in Spain, I probably with a month left to go and just preparing to go on our little excursions at the end of the semester, I received an email from the group in Spain, the team in Spain, and that they had just had an intern drop out. And so they were looking for someone else to fill that spot. And so that's
Sounds like a God thing. Yeah,
absolutely. Something that I've been learning is that God's plan is so much greater than my plan. At the end of the year, I was actually planning on going, at the end of the semester, I was planning on going right from Ecuador to Spain. But thank God I ended up turning my angle. And I feel that it's actually a really great blessing.
Okay, now wait a minute. You turned your ankle. You hurt yourself.
Yeah.
And that was a blessing? You going to tell me how that works?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it sounds horrible.
It's a little bit frustrating even still as I'm going to PT later today and going to be in recovery for the next couple weeks. But I'm so grateful that God was like, hey, you should probably rest. Rest is a good thing. And I'm like, nah, I'm just going to go right straight to the next adventure. And I'm really glad that that ended up happening because now I've had time to reflect on my experiences in Ecuador and prepare well. I like to do things. If I'm going into something and I'm committing to something, I like to do it to the best of my ability.
Yes, you are very thorough.
And so
that's one of the many things I admire about you, by the way. It's pretty cool that you're doing this. And now, as we are speaking today, how long before you take off? It's a few days, a few weeks. What? How much longer?
Yeah, about a week and a half.
Okay, so we're right on the cusp of it. Now, when we talk about Spain at Epiclesis, many of our members' minds go directly to the Way of St. James and the wonderful, grueling walk that pilgrims have been doing since, well, a very long time ago. And they end up at that marvelous cathedral where you see the huge Bota de Fumaria, I think is what it's called, where they do the blessing of the pilgrims and all of the incense and all of that. So I have a feeling that the Way of St. James is going to be woven into what you're going to be doing since you're going to ground zero there of the whole pilgrimage. Yes?
Yeah.
All right. Tell us about that.
Part of my time there and part of my internship is I'll be working in the pilgrim house and I'll be helping pilgrims to reflect on their journeys. And people take this pilgrimage for a number of different reasons.
Yeah, and not all of them necessarily Christian-y or spiritual,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, about 13% go for spiritual Christian reasons, just pray or have it be a prayer walk or things like that. But a lot of people are like, hey, this is a really cool hike, or I want to find myself, or I'm looking for things. I want to spend this time in thought. I'm looking for something spiritual, like that kind of sense. And so I'll be there to help people reflect on their journeys and help with the physical components as well, like washing clothes and just kind of catering for those needs. But also in those good conversations that I'll be having with people from realistically all over the world.
Sure. Like, oh, absolutely. Yeah. People go from all over. I don't know if I told you, but I have a very dear friend who's walking the Pilgrim Trail right now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. He's nearing the end, I think. I don't think I've heard of a ministry there that particularly focuses on folks once they get done with the journey. But that makes great sense to me. They're malleable and open and transparent, and they're ready to tell somebody about their experience and talk about it, I guess.
Yeah. And some people at the end of their journey, they don't really find what they're looking for. And so as they're malleable and as they're kind of still searching, that's kind of where the team of interns will come in and the people who are working in there and caring and will be able to pour into them and point to Jesus wherever possible.
Let's talk about where are you staying? What will that day in and day out look like physically? And then what kind of training are they going to? Surely they will, right?
In fact, I've already began doing some training and thinking about this while I was in Ecuador. I actually read the book When Helping Hurts. And so,
that's a good one, actually.
Learning how to do ministry in a proper way and just bringing dignity back to the people serving.
Yeah, we should talk about that book half a second because it was recommended to me some years ago when I was having some real deep misgivings about the way we North American evangelicals think about doing missions and, quote, helping others.
Yeah.
And there are so many tales from, well, where the rubber meets the road out there, that some of the ways we give and some of the ways we try to help can actually end up hurting. And I'm really pleased to hear that you read that. What were some of the takeaways of that book for you?
One of the biggest takeaways was when we're helping others, we're not trying to turn them into North Americans. We're trying to help them where they're at.
In their own context.
In their own context.
Which sounds like a no-brainer, but yeah. So many times when we give, especially resources or things, if we're not careful, we can, without really realizing it, train people to be as consumeristic and expectant as we are.
Yeah.
And we don't want to do that to their culture, right? Is that part of what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. And so instead of going in and building a house and having the people you're building a house for just kind of sit back and watch you, like having everyone in that process together, as well as listening to them and like first identifying what are some strengths that your community has and building off of that, you know, that kind of thing as
well. Yeah, we show up and go, we're here, so we've saved the world. You just sit back while we do what we think is best for you.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, so I guess maybe one of the big takeaways is, gosh, come in humble, right? And listen.
Yeah.
By the way, that's another very, very wonderful thing about you, I think, is that you have a real intuitive sense about people's needs and how to help and come along beside. I've enjoyed watching you develop like that over the years. What will you be doing day to day? What do you think your day to day life will look like there in Spain?
Yeah.
Like, are you staying in a mansion, a castle, a hotel, a basement? What will your day-to-day life look like?
For part of the time, I'll be staying with some of the team members that work there. And then for the other part, I'll be staying with an intern kind of at like a little rental Airbnb kind of thing.
Okay.
But I'm honestly not quite sure what the day-to-day will look like. I kind of have the big picture, but I'm excited to go in and see, like, kind of going in and being malleable as like the people on the Camino are malleable after their time.
Oh,
there.
Nice.
Being malleable and just open to, okay, where do you want me? How can I help? How can I best serve you? That kind of thing. So I believe that a lot of my time will be spent at the Pilgrim House. And then also I will be working in Apotheca, which is a nonprofit organization also under One Collective. They have two different branches there in Santiago de Compostela. So I'll be working for the Pilgrim House and also Apotheca. Apotheca helps with the local community and helps holistically serve them. That's kind of like a running trend through all of One Collective's
ministry. What do they do? What does Apotheca do, actually? What is their task?
They have a garden and they also employ local community members. Specifically, one member is like a victim of abuse, and so helping her get back on her feet by like making soap products and then selling those and making sure that they are not fully reliant on donors, but also have that income to be able to pour back into the community.
Gotcha.
And providing food and those holistic products at low cost so that people in the community are kind of able to help themselves in that way and still able to buy those products.
It's neat that in this particular role, you're also going to be able to work with a nonprofit, which you said is something that you kind of have your mind oriented toward after graduation. So that's kind of cool. How will you be assigned, if that's even the right word, different pilgrims? Are you just working in a place where these relationships and conversations just kind of grow up organically, or do you get assigned certain people? How does that work?
I believe that the community and the people that we'll be serving is pretty transient. People are moving in and out constantly. And so I don't think that there are specific people that I will be mentoring, but I think that it's more kind of like a coffee shop. People come in, sit down, have a conversation, and then leave and go back and take off for their flights and return home to wherever they're coming from. But I'll be able to take people out to lunch or minister to them in that way.
I have to ask, is part of your trip over there going to include walking some of the Camino yourself?
Yeah, it is. I'll be walking the Camino for about 12 days.
How many miles? How far away? Where is the starting point? Do you know off the top of your head?
The starting point is Astorga, and from there it'll be 12 days to Santiago de Compostela. But I'm not exactly sure how many miles.
Yeah, I'm not either.
It's around 175, but something like that. So we'll see how my ankle holds up and if I need to take a taxi or just kind of take it slow a few days. But
as you already know, several of our church members have walked the Camino, I think two of them twice, and then they went back and took their wives and did, I think, a half Camino. And I know that part of your preparation is going to be talking to them, or at least one of them. And so I'm sure you're going to have all kinds of great tales. Are folks going to be able to follow your journey? Are you going to be posting somewhere or whatnot?
I do not have social media because I find it kind of a little bit burdensome to always be like scrolling and looking through, but I will be sending out
emails. By the way, God bless you for that.
Thanks.
That is so countercultural. I can't tell you how proud I am of you. Okay, but if people want to see pictures or whatnot.
Yeah. I'll be sending out email blasts. I'm not exactly sure the frequency, but at least several times while I'm there to connect with people back home and the people who have been supporting me getting ready during this entire time. The people actually from Epiclesis that have walked the Camino, we're having them over for dinner tonight.
So, oh, good.
Yeah.
Aubrey, it also occurs to me that before we leave, we ought to say this. There may be some folks listening to this who might want to help sponsor this very wonderful Christian mission. So how could somebody throw in a little bit and help?
I believe the best way is through the link that maybe we're able to provide in the description of this podcast.
Okay, so there is a mechanism with the sending organization that we can support you. And folks listening to this podcast, I'm going to put that link in the description of the podcast. So if you zip over to the Epiclesis website, you look under podcast, you'll see this conversation. And in the description, I'll just embed that link right there. How about that, Aubrey?
Awesome. That sounds incredible.
Hey, one more question for you. When do you get back?
I get back August 1st.
Okay. And then how much time before you're scooting off again for your final year down south?
Yeah, I'll have about 15 days.
Okay. Sometime during that 15 days, if you could carve out the time, I would really love for you to come back and let's have another conversation about how it all went and maybe some broader lessons learned or how it impacted your life, et cetera. Would you be willing at least to try to find some time to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. I would love that.
Good. I would too. Well, listen, you need to know I believe in you and I love you and I'm amazed by you and God is already doing wonderful stuff with you. And it's just a privilege to be your pastor and to watch all this happen. And we'll be praying for you real hard, especially when you're there. Okie doke.
Awesome. That means a lot, Pastor Chris. Thank you so much.
Oh, you bet. Folks, you've been listening to a wonderful conversation with Aubrey Ashe. She's the daughter of my colleague, Dr. Rick Ashe. He's our pastor for intergenerational discipleship at Epiclesis. She's just come back from one amazing adventure to Ecuador. Now she's off on another amazing adventure to Spain, and we're going to talk to her again when she gets back. As always, we appreciate you listening, and until the next time we get together for another conversation, the Lord be with you.